created bills.
They helped me split firewood.
Going to open the House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities. Today is Tuesday, April 7th.
Which is period?
8 a.m. Well, kind of. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2221, and I'm going to ask Alan Ross, who we haven't heard from yet on this issue, to come forward and briefly chat with us before we decide how we're going to dispose of this bill and the amendments or potential amendments we've got, and then we'll get into our fishing and angling fee again, commercial fees. Thank you, please. So just identify yourself and share with us your thoughts on the bill.
Thank you, Chair Clem. My name is Alan Ross from Mooloolah, Oregon. My interest in the bill is just I saw it and read it, and I thought, I don't understand what the problem it's trying to solve, making it illegal for somebody to do something on their personal property seems to me is a little far. I mean, if the real problem is that we've got too many feral pigs in Oregon, I would think that the opposite approach, open it up, let everybody hunt them, get rid of them, would be the right way to go. So it just seems to me a little far-reaching, overextending government, and I'm not sure that it's solving the real problem. But there's probably thousands of variables I'm not even aware of. I'm just looking at the bill as it is.
So I'll let the committee ask questions, but the key thing here, I think, that would help understand for all of us, the definition of the word feral means it's a non-contained hunting area or property. So if there's a fence around it, then they're not feral. If it's a large hunting area, it's not feral. If there isn't, and they can run freely around from one property to another, then they're feral. So the property rights issue, sort of because the property owner doesn't fence their property and the wild pigs run around freely, they get onto other people's property who don't necessarily want them. So that's part of what we're trying to do is say, if you can't contain the pigs onto your property for essentially what would amount, you know, to then a canned hunt, then you are affecting other people, and these things are troublesome. We've heard a lot of testimony from the agency and the public about the problems. I mean, they're essentially an invasive species. They just root around and tear up everything and go crazy all over the neighborhood. And the question is, if you want to have one on your property that and fence it in, they're not feral anymore. And then this bill doesn't cover you. Except that if you wanted to sell a hunt, even if, well, how to sell a hunt on a domestic pig, maybe I'm going to have the agency come up and answer the question, but let us sort out a little bit whether this bill would stop you from selling a canned hunt on a, you know, little Wilbur from Charlotte's Web right there out in the barn. So we'll need to figure that part out, I think. But are there other questions for Mr. Ross on his concern about property rights and or comments for that matter? Representative Roblin?
And I guess the other part, as I read the bill, is that you need to have a plan to get rid of them if you're not going to fence it in. My feeling would be, as I read it, if you had a plan to get rid of them and you were figured out, you know, bring some people in, you were going to go hunt and kill them, then you have the right to not let other people on, as long as you have worked out a plan to get rid of the feral pigs on your property so they don't carry over into other people's property. I see that as part of this deal, too.
Chair Clem, Roblin, I understand that. It just seems counterintuitive to me. If the problem is too many wild pigs and we need to get rid of them because they're a predator or they're a pest or they're an invasive species, this bill seems counterintuitive. I mean, open it up, invite everybody, in fact, pay them to go out and kill them, let's get rid of them. I don't understand what this bill is trying to solve. If the issue is people are turning them out so that they can sell hunts and capitalize on that, well, make that illegal. That should be what's wrong. But it just seems counterintuitive to me. That's all.
I think that is what we're trying to make illegal, actually. So if you don't want to turn them out and you want them on your own property, you fence, and then you're not covered by the bill. If the incentive is, hey, you know, like you said, if I let some loose and then I can sell a hunt, this bill makes it illegal. But if you just want to have them on your property and sell a hunt, then that's the part I just need to understand, if that would still be currently legal. I don't know if anybody would do it, but yes, it still would be currently legal, even if this bill passed, on your property to fence it in so they didn't affect the neighbors and then, you know, sell hunts. Yeah, Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's also legal for you, if you have these feral pigs on your property, to say, hunters, my property's open for you to come and take pigs all you want. In fact, if you wanted to pay them, you could probably do that. You just couldn't ask them to pay you to do it. So, you know, inviting people on to get rid of it is legal in this bill without a problem. It's only when you try to charge them to come on your property to go hunt that pig, if you haven't enclosed it, that we have a real problem. We do need to figure out the other answer.
And that is the bottom line, is we're trying to take away the incentive to start pigs out on your property and then just let them go and then charge for it. That and then we're trying to make that illegal. That's basically the bill. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so our thinking is, by making that illegal, your last statement,
mm-hmm.
we're adding a tool to Fish and Wildlife or to others to get rid of the pigs. Is it possible that we could be taking away a tool? It's one of the points that Mr. Ross has made. Why isn't accepting pay a possible tool to get rid of? And you're saying feral, and he's saying feral, by the way.
Yeah.
Dang it.
I'm sure he's right.
Just call the whole thing off.
Yeah. I think...
That's a good idea.
We might want to have the agency come up next and answer the question, but I think the fundamental issue is, if there were wild pigs out running around and they were off the property, they would actually use hunters to go get them. I think we had testimony about that there was some out in southeastern Oregon and the locals took care of business before they even got there. But I think the tool would remain to use hunters to go out and get them. It's just we're trying to stop people from doing it for a profit motive, letting them loose. Unless they fence them, then, you know, go crazy. You know, just chase them around, do whatever you need to do within your fenced property.
Mr. Chair, one follow-up.
Yep. Representative Gilliam.
I would suggest that we have Fish and Wildlife come up and maybe help us here.
That's an excellent idea. Oh, hello. Yes, Ron.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Ron Anglin, Wildlife Division Administrator. It would help if I knew exactly what it was you wanted help with. So if you could repeat.
His name is Representative Vic Gilliam.
So I think our questions are, I think I got a nod already, but would it, as long as someone fences their property, they can then sell a hunt for a wild pig on their property? Or not a wild pig, it's no longer wild, it's now fenced, and by definition, therefore, it's not wild.
Chair Clem, that is correct.
Okay, so then are we trying to get it at then people letting them loose and they run off the property because it's unfenced, and now by definition they're wild, and then we're worried about people doing that in order to then sell the hunts?
Chair Clem, what we have seen is a real interest in trying to have pig populations get established, free-ranging pig populations, and selling hunts for those animals. And the intent of the bill is to take that incentive away. Not that we want to stop people from hunting them and killing them. It's just in trying to create a market for pig hunting that has been proven in other states not to control the problem.
That's what I was just going to say.
And then if they are out running freely, we do have the ability to essentially send an agent out or a hunter out to go after them because they're considered then pests, or I don't know what the term is. But
Chair Clem, once they meet the definition of feral as established in statute and by Department of Agriculture, then yes, anybody can go out and remove that animal.
And a lot of folks like to. I mean, if I remember right, OHA had one of their directors telling me that they get emails, quite a few, saying, "Hey, where are some wild pigs?" And so someone will be happy to go out and take care of business, you know, if they're out running freely. And if they're on the property, again, it's back to the private property owner's right to go ahead and sell it if there's a buyer, and that stays if the bill passes. So Representative Van Orman, and then we'll come over to Representative Shaw.
Well, it's really the incidence of growth in the number of counties, for me, that's quite striking. In 2004, there were 7 counties that had identified, and then in 2008, we're up to 17 counties, and at least Harney and Malheur have additional sightings. So I'm thinking in terms of what it's like when you've got feral cats on your property, and they keep growing, and the one thing that gets rid of the feral cats in my neighborhood are the coyotes. So they kill them and eat them. So one of the questions I have for Ron is that are there any predators for these animals?
Chair Clem.
That we know of?
Representative Van Orman, a bear or an adult cougar probably could take one on and be successful, an adult pig, and be successful in taking it out. There's lots of things when the pigs are smaller that can prey on the pigs, but they have a very high reproductive rate. It's possible for a sow to crank out 3 or 4 litters during a year. Just like the cats. A full-grown adult pig can weigh upwards of 300 pounds, and they're pretty ferocious, and there's not a lot of natural predators for them here in the United States.
Thank you.
Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As long as this is the way I see this, as long as the profit incentive to having wild feral pigs on your property, unfenced, uncontrolled, unmanaged, exists, we are literally encouraging people to let these animals out. And when we remove that profit incentive, it will be no incentive or reason or motivation to let them go, because you will be in violation of the statute. And to your comment, sir, about the private property, we regulate actions and behavior. If your actions on your private property have a negative impact on your neighbor, that's what these pigs are doing. They are having a negative impact on all kinds of resources. So that's how I clarify all this, and public lands too. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Gilliam.
But to Representative Shoffler's point, creating a market versus using a market, particularly at the point where we're saying we're kind of overrun with wild pigs right now. That's my question. Actually, I'm not saying it's the only way or the way, but the freedom to use the market to reduce the number of pigs is one of my questions. And then if I can follow up one more question, Mr. Chair. Ron, I just want to clarify current law. They being feral pigs, are considered wildlife now. Is that right?
Chair Clem, Representative Gilliam, yes. Once they meet the definition of feral, they are classified within the wildlife statutes for us to be able to take action.
One more follow-up, please. Are there other species where we've had to come in with a bill like this? Because they're already wildlife. Assume we already have a framework in the law, but you're saying this is a bigger problem. Is there a precedent for this kind of doubling down, so to speak?
Chair Clem, Representative Gilliam, it's kind of a two-phase answer. The first part is I'm not aware of any other wildlife species that are exactly like this. The reason that we've taken the bill forward is when we look at other states that are or were at where we are today, they have tried to use hunting to control the pigs, and they've been totally unsuccessful. And what happens is you develop a market for pig hunting, and landowners then have an incentive to manage 4 pigs on their property, some landowners, and sell hunts, and there's no containment of the animals. You continue with the escapes. You continue with the habitat degradation. There are some statistics that we recently found out from Texas that pigs have surpassed coyotes as far as predators on baby lambs, and that they're spending more effort removing feral pigs that are killing sheep and lambs than they have ever done with coyotes. So they really have the capability of taking over and having a major impact on the landscape.
If I might, the market, the free market, remains intact as long as you fence your property. And there is no market allowed in Oregon, I don't think, for a private entrepreneur actually selling a hunt all over the place. There's guides who can take you on one, but we don't allow people to go sell hunts for deer or sell hunts for elk. That's the state's role, is to manage those populations. But there is no market at work, I don't think, in actual how many deer get harvested in a year, how many antelope get harvested. That's not a business that decides that. That's a government that decides that. And then businesses get to take advantage of the opportunities that on the number of tags that are out there, something along those lines. But the sort of private property free market, I think, is retained in the bill, which is you fence your property and you can sell hunts. Representative Roblin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Isn't it also true that pigs, feral pigs, also are a health risk in the carrying of different diseases, pneumonia and some other kinds of things that are transmittable?
Trichinosis.
Chair Klim, Representative Roblin, yes, that is correct. I'm not real up to speed on that myself, but they have been documented to be fairly virulent harborers of diseases and can be resistant to it, but it can be passed on to other animals and to humans.
Why do Hebrews do not eat pork?
Okay, I'm going to get us into a work session too in a moment so we can talk further, but Representative Krieger.
You're from Coos County originally?
Yes, sir.
Probably aware of Curry County. When I got there in 64, there were several thousand pigs in the Carpenterville, Saunders Creek, Agnes area. Locals hunted them. They leased land from the Forest Service to run them on. And what about leasing adjacent lands to your own? You could still do that if you wanted to have hunts, as long as it was fenced. But down in that country, for years, the district attorney didn't allow anybody to kill those hogs, even when they were off the property, because they were livestock. And they were claimed by two or three families that have been there since the 1800s. And if you wanted to kill one, you had to go get a written permit from somebody, because if I found you out there with one, or the sheriff did, it was livestock larceny.
Chair Klim, Representative Krieger, that is correct, and that is why several sessions ago the feral pig language was adopted, that if they were not claimed within a certain period of time, they then were no longer classified as livestock. They could then be dealt with as a predator under the Department of Ag statutes and as wildlife, and we could take steps to reduce the animals.
So, committee members, we've got in front of us a couple of amendments. The dash twos were designed to get at this question of, if you didn't know that you had wild pigs on your property and you get a letter or a knock on the door letting you know that you do, how do we treat people fairly so they have some options instead of it feeling like a harassment from the police? And so that's what the dash twos are designed to do. So they say a person is not in violation if they contact ODF&W within 72 hours after discovering them, or they can provide the department with a plan that details the specific tasks and deadlines to either confine and no longer have them be wild, or to have them hunted or trapped. As I think most of us are completely fine with hunting going on to get rid of these things. It's just a question of, the department's got to have the tools either get volunteers or hire someone if no one is willing to do it, though I think there are plenty who are willing to do it. So I would take a motion on the dash two amendment so we can discuss them. If
Mr. Chair,
it's Representative Wingard.
I'd move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2221.
Representative Wingard moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2221. Any discussion on these? I think that we did a decent job of giving some options for property owners to not have this really awkward encounter and be unable to understand why the game wardens of the world are knocking on their door. Yeah, it's okay. We're kind of in a different mode now, if that's all right.
Are you finished with the witnesses, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, I should let you go. I'm sorry. Yeah, you bet. Please, thank you. I know he's got some opinions on the next topic, too, him in order. Yeah, because there's lots of folks here. Any objection to the dash two amendments? Okay. With seeing none, so adopted. And then I take a motion on the bill. Oh, and in this motion, why don't we let my vice chair do it, if that's all right. We've got a subsequent referral removal.
You don't have to have that.
No.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I move that House Bill 2221, as amended, be moved to the floor with the due pass and the referral to which committee was it? Joint Ways and Means be rescinded.
Oh, okay. Representative Krieger moves 2221. House Bill 2221 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to Ways and Joint Ways and Means be removed. Is there any discussion? Representative Gill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for going around the block one more time on this, and I appreciate the committee's, most of the committee's patience. But I just am not there yet. I appreciate the discussion, but in the overall priorities of bills in this committee, and certainly bills for fish and wildlife, this is not high on my list, and I'm not convinced yet. Thank you.
All right. Representative Krieger.
Mr. Chair, we had earlier testimony, I think the first day, about the negative impact of pigs on habitat, period. And that's also taking place on private land that these people don't want them on their property, but they came from somewhere else. And there's a huge impact on public lands. Now, a neighbor of mine some 15, 20 years ago bought 20 pigs and turned them loose on this ranch adjacent to us. Within a week, they are over in our place, and they literally plowed 2 acres in a day. Unbelievable. I called him. He came over and said, well, this isn't going to work. Had to pick them up, and they were gone. But I just don't think that many people understand the impact they're going to have on the habitat, which is directly related to our our deer, our elk, every critter we've got out there. They go into an area where you have acorns, for instance. They'll pick it clean in just no time at all. What's the wildlife going to have in that area? So it's not like in the old days of the homestead, you had a couple pigs, you roamed, and you got one or two a year. I think we have to look at it a lot different today than we did 30, 40, 50 years ago.
No, and thank you, Mr. Chair. I having listened very intently to this conversation, I think this is a good bill. I do think that any way we can take the incentive away to raise and breed these animals, the better off we are. So with that, I definitely support the bill.
Further discussion?
Well, I guess.
Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. I'm sorry. I'm just struck by how quickly they breed, because I am right now struggling with feral cats, and I mean struggling. I have more cats than I know what to do with, and I'm allergic to them, and so trying to find help to get rid of them is another matter. So I just see the maps that we've seen, and I've seen the growth, and I agree with Representative Beyer.
If we don't do something about the cougars, they're going to eat all the cats in Oregon at some point.
Well,
dogs,
that's true,
and
but
kids.
Unfortunately.
So, with that, seeing no further discussion, will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Byers.
Aye.
Representative Gillian.
Nope.
Representative Roman.
Aye.
Representative Shock.
Aye.
Representative Winger.
Aye.
Vice Chair Van Orman.
Aye.
Vice Chair Krieger.
Oink. That's a yes.
Chair Clapp.
Motion passes. It's sent to the floor, and oink gets to carry the bill. Yes. Yes, thank you. Okay, then. What's my bill? I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2223 and call. Yeah. Why don't we have the agency director come up first, and then we'll get into the members of the public. We've got lots of them. And you can bring whoever you like, director.
Gracious.
Several on call right here, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah. morning, Chair Clem, co-chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Roy Elker, Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. On my right, Mr. Tom Rudiman, Deputy for Administration. I'm passing out some prepared written testimony along with an exhibit that lays out the total fee package as well as laying out in detail what the item is, what the current fee is, the proposed new fee, what additional revenue would be put in by that change, and the additional revenue rolled up into 2011 and 13. I was not going to read from this prepared testimony because I knew we'd have a large number of the public here to testify, but I wanted to make some key points before I step down, and I know also this sounds like it's headed to work group this afternoon. So again, I'll make some brief points about the bill and then let the public come up to testify. First of all, members of the committee and Chair Clem, we started this discussion on a proposed fee increase for both sports and commercial constituents of the agency about 16 months ago. And we started with a public group called the External Budget Advisory Committee, which is a group of about 40 very interested individuals, both lobbyists and key sports groups and commercial leaders, county commissioners, others that we invite to come talk to the agency about its proposed biennial budget and how that's playing out. As well as that group, which met three or four times in the last 16 months, we did go out to the public and have 13 town hall meetings, which generated over 350 folks total, from a high of about one in Ontario, to a low of one in Ontario, to a high of about 65 in Coos Bay, and everything in between. And we had those meetings from Astoria to Ontario and from Portland to Medford. And as well as those public meetings, we've had many, many meetings with many of our constituencies, like the core group, the Oregon Hunter Association, Northwest Sport Fishing Industry, guides and packers, steelheaders. We've tried to reach out as many folks as possible, and that's a reflection of all the folks in the room, to try and educate them about where the department stands with its budget, and in particular, in regards to this fee increase. I'm not saying that we talked to every single person that's concerned about our fee increase, but we did talk to lots of people to try and get some input and figure out how to plan ahead for the next few biennia. Now, I think most of you know that in 2003 we had our last fee increase. It was only on the recreational side. The commercial fees and occupational miscellaneous fees were not raised at that time. In fact, if you look at the exhibit, you'll see many of those commercial miscellaneous and occupational fees have not been changed since the mid-70s or the mid-80s. So this general fee increase on the sports side averages about 21%, though it's not straight across the board, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And on the commercial side, we tried to balance what inflation had done in the time since the last fee increase on the commercial side, as well as looking at the cost to administer that program currently by the agency. And so those were the factors we used on both sides to kind of come together with this proposed fee increase package that you have in front of you today. The agency, and me personally, I think we've brought to this body the most prudent financial course to protect Oregon's fish and wildlife resources and for this agency for the next 6 to 8 years. Presently, and as many of you know from discussions with you personally, 16 months ago when we started this budget process, we thought we had enough ending balance to get us through the 2009-11 biennium without a fee increase. But what would happen without some sort of adjustment in fees in 2009-11, in 2011-13, when we reached that next biennia, we would face a much bigger hole, a hole that could not be closed with even a much larger fee increase, both commercial and sports, and would result in some kind of fee increase package larger than what we have in front of you today, as well as major program cuts to balance the budget. So those were the kind of the two options we laid out to the public. Come forward with a modest increase now to protect ourselves for the next 6 to 8 years and ensure that we could make it as far as we could without any changes in fee structure or fee increases, or squeak through this biennium, and then on the other end come back to you facing a pretty good-sized hole that could not be covered without program cuts as well as a major fee increase. That was about 14 to 16 months ago. Now, I think all of you would probably know better than I that the current economic situation here in the state has changed drastically since we started these discussions as an agency back in January of 2008. And in particular, the loss of general fund and lottery funds that we haven't seen the end of in this process has us pretty concerned and is kind of changing as we go and changing how we're looking at this issue of the fee increase. Two examples of what general fund loss does to the agency. First of all, and I have Captain Walt Marquis here from Oregon State Police, our law enforcement partner in this state is the Oregon State Police Fish and Wildlife Division, and they will be facing pretty hard cuts in their general fund and lottery funds, for which, frankly, the department will need to figure out how best to assist OSP to keep up their current enforcement effort. Second of all, where we do have some general fund in the agency, and we don't have much, about 10% of our current budget, right now we're facing the loss of all the general fund from the Marine program, about $1.5 million, which the fee increases on the commercial side would help to offset. So I think that's also kind of something that's come up in the last few months that this committee should be aware of. Just to talk a little bit about the fee increase, and then I'll wrap up, Chair Clem. The fee increase right now is currently about 80% is designed to support current program, and about 20% would be to enhance requested programs by our constituents. And so, from talking to hunters and other wildlife enthusiasts, one of the key things that hunters told us repeatedly they wanted was increased law enforcement, particularly in Central Oregon, where big game herds are at risk. And so in this budget package, it reflects that we're going to put money in the Oregon State Police for two new game troopers. Now, of course, the math has all been changed with the loss of general fund, and we have to figure that out. But currently, our proposal was designed to add two new law enforcement troopers to Central Oregon. It was also designed to very significantly reduced the cost for juvenile participation and for those families with kids that want to hunt and fish. And that was a big issue for our hunting community. They wanted to reduce the cost for kids to get out there and hunt and fish. And in particular, we added a new juvenile turkey tag, which helped reduce the cost for turkey hunting for kids. We added a non-resident juvenile fishing license, which currently we didn't have in the state before, and that especially stepdads and grandparents had asked us for, so when their kids come from out of state and get to stay the summer here, they wouldn't have to spend a lot of money to take the kids fishing all summer. And we heard that over the past few years, and so we built that into our package. We also put together a very much reduced what we call a sports pack. And a sports pack is basically the complete package of recreational hunting and fishing tags and permits that we sell. Well, generally, for instance, the new price of a sports pack for adults for all our licenses and permits on the sports side is about $160 with the fee increase. Well, we make and create a brand new package called the Juvenile Sports Pack that somebody from 12 to 17 could purchase, or the parents, for a cost of $50. And so that comes with some cost to the agency of about $1 million of lost revenue versus the current system we're under now. But again, we felt strongly that with the fee increase and with our constituent support, we wanted to do something that all of us agreed would be helpful to fish and wildlife in the future, and that is, let's get more juveniles participating and let's reduce the cost for them to participate. And lastly, we have enhancements on the hunting side, supporting more habitat work, particularly for mule deer and black-tailed deer, both species of concern to the hunting public. On the fish side, there's lots of support always for more trout stocking, for more trout fishing. We had money built in for that. We also needed to keep intact our Willamette monitoring for those important fisheries in the Willamette, particularly salmon and steelhead. It added additional resources in the marine and shellfish program. It added some additional resources for Oregon State Police on the marine enforcement side, and also filled in behind some federal, some loss of federal funds on the Sandy River hatchery to keep that open at this time. Chair Clem, that kind of finishes my remarks. I know there's other folks here to testify. Be happy to take questions. Appreciate the opportunity today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Elker. Representative Krieger.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roy, I've been meeting with you. You've almost become a fixture in my office. Look over there. He's not in the chair. Something's missing. Someone's taken something out of my office. Anyway, he's been in there off and on now for about, 6 weeks, kind of pretty steady. Looking at this issue, your staff, Kurt Melcher, Assistant Director Ed Bowles, Head of Fisheries, has been in. I don't know how many meetings there's been. Kind of laying it out, similar to what you did, that I believe it was August 17th you were at North Bend with your fee increase proposal.
Representative Clem, Representative, no, I think it was in April probably, but I've been in Coos Bay several times.
But anyway, yeah. It didn't go over real well, I'll tell you that, and Representative Roblin talked about that. And originally it was no, not only no, but no. But what's changed? The economy of the state's changed. Our resources are at risk. Our hatcheries are at risk. Our enforcement's gone. The people that you need for ESA issues to be in compliance with your federal partners are at risk. So we have to look at what we're doing as legislators, and I would hope, you know, all the constituent groups, whether it be Oregon anglers, whether it be Oregon hunters, NRA, you name it, are going to have to look at this budget and try to keep intact the very things that we value that makes Oregon, rural Oregon, some of the heritage things that we pass down to our families and through landowners to make sure we do our very best that we can always have them there. So I'm looking at this totally different. The chair has assigned us to have a work group. You're aware of that. We've got those people lined out starting this afternoon. But one of the things I would like you to address, we went through this in 2003, and you had 20.5 million. They took 10 million, and then you had a cuts list, what that meant. Then Director Ball came in and said, now, if you give us the fee increase, this is what it generates, and this is what you're going to buy with it. And I'd like to see that pretty well defined so we can pick up a piece of paper, and there it is. Numbers, slots, biologists, hatcheries, that type of thing. And then the other issue was, Mr. Chair, we've talked about doing it in over 2 years. In other words, part of it in the first year, second part in the second year, which, Mr., I hope you'd address that now. And some of the value of doing it that way, one thing, there wouldn't be anything laying around for anybody to sweep, because they ain't going to be there. But I would hope that you could get us a list of the actual cuts, what we're going to buy with those dollars, and then talk about the giving you the increase over a two-year period instead of one bang.
Representative Clem, Chair Clem, Representative Krieger, yes, we're working on that list, Representative Krieger, but I'm not so sure it's clear-cut as what we faced in 03. As you remember, when we came in 03 under Director Ball and I was a deputy then, the agency had some serious financial issues because of some previous, perhaps less than, let's just say they had some fiscal issues that Lindsay and I inherited when we came in the door. And as a result of that, I think if we hadn't gotten the fee increase in 03, we would have faced some severe cuts to the program, and that's how it was laid out. In this case, we decided to lay out an option where we didn't face a drastic cut didn't face drastic losses in the core program like we would have faced in 03, and come in with a fee increase earlier to build ending balance to then let us go through the next 6 to 8 years without a change. Now, so the other thing, Representative Krieger, is that with the loss of general fund through the next few months, I'm definitely going to be prepared to show you a list of things that we may lose unless we're able to generate some fee increase and that some we use some backfill there. But that's always a tricky business because folks want to feel like they're getting something more for their fee increase. Again, you'll hear that today. I don't want to speak for anybody here in the public. On the commercial side, we met with Paul Siebert yesterday, and we are working very specifically on a commercial fisheries list on the ad valorem issue that kind of lays out, with the loss of general fund, particularly in the marine program, what that means for us and how we'd use this increase in ad valorem to help us on that issue. Because, frankly, without a strong and intact marine program, some of these commercial fishing opportunities, we won't be able to take advantage of them because of the, in the last decade, the intensity and complexity of federal management of our fish species has meant we have to have a robust marine program, or we're not going to let our, we can't let our guys fish. They wouldn't be able to fish without all the more monitoring and intensive capacity for research on how they catch things, particularly the bycatch issue and that stuff.
Mr. Chair, I can appreciate the general fund loss, and I certainly appreciate a position we're in. But, and I did not feel comfortable, although I freely admit I did vote to sweep 80-some million dollars out of various sources, because that was a retrospective action based on a situation we didn't anticipate. Now, it's a horse of a different color. We're looking forward. And, Mr. Chair, I really think, and I may get myself in a lot of trouble here, but that's fine. I think we should have a statutory amendment saying very clearly that this money cannot be swept out to fill in holes in the general fund after we ask all these people to give it for a specific purpose. Now, I'll vote for the fee bill. If I don't get my way, I'll still vote for it, but that's pretty much how I feel about it.
Thank you, Representative Shuffley. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem.
We got lots of people here to testify, too.
Okay, so. I'll try to be brief. I think I do appreciate the approach you're taking of modestly doing it now as opposed to waiting till later. And I say that because I've been through this with sewer fees and water fees, and we postponed, and then suddenly we've hit the wall, and now we have this huge increase, which has been, you know, far more onerous. But my question, it relates to the actual purchase of these licenses. And do you anticipate, regardless of the fee, whether it's raised or whether it stays the same, that based on what we know on everything else, do you think that this application process will slow down and we won't have the number of applications that we've had in the past? Do you have any idea?
Representative Clem, Chair Clem, Representative Van Orman. Well, that's always a difficult thing to predict. So far, our sales have stayed good. They've stayed well as the economy has soured. And frankly, it's a little bit of a function of time that when all the studies nationwide that talk about people not hunting and fishing anymore, Representative, the number one reason why folks tend to drop out of participation in hunting, fishing, and wildlife viewing is because they don't have the time. And so, unfortunately, there are not as many people working, and people maybe have a little more time for this kind of recreation. Now, the other side of that is that looking at all the money that people spend on expenditures on hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing around the country, the last study I saw just last week mentioned that the cost of fees and licenses in terms of all the rest of the money people spend for these activities is about 3% of a total person's kind of hunting, fishing, wildlife viewing budget. That was a nationwide average. So at some point we worry that getting a hunting license, a fishing license, or whatever you're going to do, spend money to go on a bird watching trip, is going to get too expensive to do. But so far, we're feeling good that people are still kind of doing the same kinds of things they've been doing all along. And I think, as you'll hear from the public, one of the reasons I think that is just people love to do these things. They're just passionate about these things. And at some point, there's a price where you can't afford to participate, but hopefully we're not near that price, and even with the fee increase.
Thank you.
Representative
Kruger?
Representative
Robles
was first.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, and I'll express it, I support the idea that Representative Krieger's talking about this transparency, and I have another bill totally unrelated to this that has about transparency and get stuff up on the web so people can know where their state money is going, and I think that's really important. The part that is so frustrating, you know, we have a big conversation about the H2O project, you know, and then we think it's gone, and then we find little parts of it. I just want people to clearly articulate where the money's going so we know it. And we've had that conversation in Coastal Caucus. I worry, you know, the hunters are pretty much online, on board with a lot of this stuff, even at the meeting that I was at, and the reason is they want to have some more enforcement over in Eastern Oregon because they worry about poaching and other kinds of issues making a big impact on the already diminished herds. And so if you've got more deer or elk being killed by people who don't even have a license than the ones that get a license, it's a real problem. So we've got to do something about that kind of thing. On the converse side, you look at the people over in the fishing issue on the coast, and it's getting limited about what we can fish because of all the other kinds of problems, so our opportunities are less. When we have good hatchery programs, all of a sudden bay and lakes get a little bit more. I mean, I don't think anybody in the fishing community would be uptight about it if we were improving those things so there'd be more fish in those areas that we can fish, for example. You know, the bay in Coos Bay was a wonderful thing to watch last year. When there was no fishing for salmon in the ocean, we could fish in the bay because the fish were coming back. I mean, if the opportunity is there, we're willing to pay for those kinds of things, especially with these fees. When it comes to some of the other bigger global concepts, whether it's marine reserves and what OPEC has decided or whether it's wave energy, we want those people to pay their share for those kinds of things. And those, to me, are general fund kind of issues as opposed to fee issues. And so when you start dividing this, if people clearly understood where these fees were going to, including the commercial people, I mean, they recognize that we have a whole lot of fish out there that have not been, we haven't gone through the process we have to do a stock assessment. And they also know that if we don't do it, at some point ESA is going to come in and say, you know, until we have these numbers, you don't get to fish. So we know we're on a timeline, we have to do stuff. So if the fees specifically said, we're going to do these assessments, or in these stock assessments, we're going to get this stuff done, I think the commercial guys would say, I'm a little more confident then if I know the things are going to be taken care of so we don't end up having a closure off the ocean. So, I mean, if they're directly related to the kinds of activities, we feel a lot better. So it's seeing that kind of stuff up front that I think is really important for people. And you've got people in the hunting community who are understanding why they need this stuff, and we don't hear as many people in the hunting community saying, you know, don't give us the fees, we need it. We haven't got that same kind of specificity yet with regard to what's happening in the fishing side. And somehow we need to keep having those conversations, and people have to trust that the things that we're doing and saying are the things that we're going to do with those kinds of dollars. So I hope we can come to that kind of thing. We get people to the table. I appreciate you having a conversation with the commercial guys to figure out these kinds of things. I do want to put on the record, they are going to start doing some stuff with our bait fish so that we can actually get bait fish. We lost a lot of the albacore tuna fleet last year, went up to Washington to sell stuff. A whole lot of reasons for that, but I don't want us to be the reason that we lose some of those fisheries in the process. So I guess to me what I would ask you to do, and clearly hear from you, that we are going to try to let people match up what these fees are going to do, even if it's just to maintain. Everybody knows that things cost more, so that's not a problem. It's just that new things, they want to know what new things are going to happen, or if you're going to actually try to build a reserve so we can protect that reserve so down the line they don't have to pay the fee, they'd be happy. Any comments would be appreciated.
Chair Clem, Representative Roland, we had a meeting a couple of days ago with a number of our commercial fisheries constituents, and we are working on that issue, particularly with the ad valorem tax issue. They want to know, you know, it's going to be, why are we paying more and where would that money go? So we are working. We met with Paul Siebert yesterday. He gave us some idea about how best to line that out on a two-pager. So hopefully, I'm not sure it'll be ready this afternoon, but I think it'll be ready in a few days for us to start the discussion, the second discussion with the commercial fishing folks to really lay out for them. I mean, one of the issues that I think is long overdue for the agency is to hire a person to run the Dungeness crab fishery. We haven't had that, and I think if we had that, I know the Crab Commission, Nick Furman, if he was here, would be very supportive of that. And those are some of the issues we talked about that would greatly help work on the crab fishery and really support that fishery, because it is a complex fishery, and it's getting more complex all the time. So thank you for the opportunity to comment, Representative Roblin.
Thank you.
Get our folks up here because they're going to have about 3 minutes each at this point. The one thing I would like to have, just for information purposes, is the on the proposed fee increases as they are now, what percent of the revenue comes from resident, non-commercial, and then everything else? So non-resident, non-commercial, and then all the commercial.
Chair Clem, we can put that for you. Okay. If you give us a day or so, we'll have all that for you. Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.
And we've got three folks from 100 miles or more, so I'm going to call them up first. That's Steve Mathers, George Houston, and Commissioner Terry Thompson.
100 miles, Terry? Yeah, that's really close, 100 miles, Terry.
I'm close.
Get the pedometer out. We're going to walk that. We're going to walk the last.
I'm 180. I don't.
What route are you taking?
Pretty close.
Because we're in hearing room D.
Yeah, that's right.
C. You just
being meetings to get these things.
Yeah, that'll work. Yeah, that'll be fine.
So, Steve, got you first. You got here early and got on the list, and you were more than 100 miles. So
yeah.
You get extra brownie points. So unfortunately, you only get about 3 minutes, though, so go ahead.
I'm not going to be that long. Okay. Representative Clem, committee members, my name is Steve Mathers. I'm president of the Oregon Guides and Packers Association. We do not oppose the fee increase, but we just think that the fee increase for the outfitters is excessive, and I'm going to give you a little background on that. Oregon's Outfitter and Guide program went into law in 1997. It was designed for two reasons: to give outfitters stability, guaranteeing them tags for the future season. Outfitters received half the number of tags issued to non-residents the previous year, or a maximum of 2.5% of the tags for any specific unit. The program also was established to promote Oregon tourism. Outfitter tags can only be sold to non-residents, and this proposed tag increase is going to seriously interfere with this. Oregon's current fees are already higher than two of our neighboring states. For example, Oregon's existing outfitter deer tags are $4.51, proposed to go to $5.42, compared to Nevada's at $300 and Idaho's at $258.50. Our existing outfitter elk tags are $666.50, proposed to go to $800, compared to Idaho's at $372. Nevada doesn't offer outfitter elk tags. With the present economy, we had to seriously discount our trips in order to sell them at the existing price, so any increase in outfitter fees will come directly out of our profits. I urge you to leave the outfitter tags at the existing price so that we can continue to accomplish the purpose they were designed for.
Great, thank you.
Please.
Chair Clem, Vice Chairs, members of the committee, my name is George Houston. I'm from Sandy, Oregon. I'm immediate past president of the Oregon Chapter Foundation for North American Wild Sheep. Thanks very much for your time today and allowing us to testify. We have a general support for the fee increase for ODFW. As long as the commercial and occupational license fees are appropriately increased, we'd like any fee increase to provide more hunting and fishing opportunities. We recommend highly that the increases should be directly connected to enhancement of the juvenile hunting programs. And we'd like to express our extreme emphasis that the counter-poaching operations that are going on right now and the DNA forensic analysis program, which was promulgated by the sports groups in the state of Oregon, we passed the hat and came up with enough money to contract with the state of Idaho for a forensic DNA analysis for a tool for our big game cops to be able to utilize in putting a hammer on the game thieves that are killing our stuff out of season so we don't have anything to hunt. We'd like to see that piece go forward. Like Director Elliker spoke to on their town hall meetings when they went around the state, almost everybody at the meeting said, don't cut the game cops. No matter where he went, add game cops. We need them. We'd like to see the ODFW proposal for juvenile hunting strategy go forward. This juvenile sports pack makes an awful lot of sense to get more kids in the field working with their relatives, friends. More effective predator control in the state of Oregon means more hunter opportunity. And if you look at the hunters as customers, that means enhanced customer service. We have dedicated funding in this state for bighorn sheep and for mountain goats that are derived through tag sales. We'd like to see them accounted for and stay intact for use for those species. We'd like to see the non-consumptive users in the state of Oregon pony up with the rest of the fishers and the hunters in order to pay their fair share in the access for the activities that they use. We feel as though ODFW has done an outstanding job in facilitating partnerships with other sport groups and individual sports enthusiasts. We'd like to see the Access and Habitat program reauthorized again. And to close, I'd like to say that your continuing active support for ODFW field and administrative staff sends a signal to the residents of the state of Oregon that live in the rural counties that the places that they live are important. We'd like to see your continuing support for the programs and activities with appropriate levels of funding. In the times that we're in of declining economy and stagnation of the economy, there's an awful lot of the folks that live in this state that aren't going to have a lot of out-of-state and long-distance travel opportunities this and next year and probably the year after. So hunting and fishing is going to be it for an awful lot of them. We'd like to see you support that. Thank you.
Thank you for the excellent testimony.
Commissioner Terry Thompson, and lifelong commercial fisherman and recreational fisherman, I'm here to address the ad valorem tax. There was a lack of transparency between the department and the people who really pay the ad valorem tax. Maybe not all their fault, because fishermen have become jaded with going to meetings by the Department of Fish and Wildlife, because they don't really discuss the issues that the truly professional fishermen want to discuss. That's a problem that we need to work on. But inside the ad valorem tax, if you're not familiar with it, it was passed in 1992, and the purpose for the tax was so that we didn't have to come back and revisit raising the tax all the time. Since 1992, it's actually doubled. Ad valorem tax is paid on the value of the fish at the point of sale, for the first sale. That adjust as the time goes and the price of fish goes up. Of course, it'll have times it'll vary a little bit, but it's pretty stable right now, even in the downturn of the economy. If we have a good season, it goes up. But over time, it will inflate. And that's one of the reasons it hadn't increased in 1990, since 1992, and I don't think a lot of people understood it. But this is a 200% increase. The people who pay the largest amount of tax in here are the crabbers, the shrimpers, and the trawlers. Now, the crabbers are looking for a biologist, but if you look at the trawlers, about all they get from ODF&W is a dead fish count. When you look at salmon, they get hatchery and all these other things. Salmon fishermen aren't even going to be in the ocean fishing. There's a lot we need to discuss in this work group related to this ad valorem tax. We had a good meeting the other day that produced a lot of information, I think, for the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and gave them a feeling for how a lot of people felt about it. This tax needs to be adjusted. It had built a $3 million surplus. Part of it was swept away by the general fund, which still bothers me, and I know it bothers a lot of people in these funds around the state. They've paid a poundage to the commercial fish fund that's supposed to be spent back on commercial fishing. We created that because at one time that money was being spent all over the place, and if those fishermen are paying that poundage, they wanted to see it come back and work toward the commercial fishery. Given, though, that money was swept away, that money had built up a $3 million surplus. Now, they say that was in a declining balance. If it does, it seems like we need to tweak it a little bit, not a 200% increase. Think about it, a 200% increase on these guys. Some of these guys would go from paying $10,900. I would talk to one boat that was a shrimp or crab. He figured he paid $10,900 last year to over $31,000. That's a huge hit. That's a percentage of his income. He's already paying for 7% for a buyback, and then there's a couple other small percentages going out for trawl commission fees and all that, and now another 2%. He's going to be well over 10% of his gross is going out to the state. Literally, he could get to a situation where he's going to go fishing, because on these bigger boats, they're very, very cost intensive. I mean, by the time you pay the kind of fuel they do and you drag gear across the bottom, and it's a huge portion, there's nothing left. I mean, they could literally be nothing left to feed their families. And the thing that's paying you would go out of business. Plus, we're looking at a new type of management now called an IFQ system. I think the IFQ system is going to allow us to harvest more fish, and give them a larger increase in the total dollars produced from the fishery, which would put money back into the state. We need to look at all this when we look at the ad valorem tax before we make a decision to make a 200% increase.
Terry, just we're trying to find actually what you're referring to in the bill. So is that
back on the very back page, there's a reference to a 3.15. It's one word. That's all it was. And that's one of the reasons nobody found it. I happened to found it when I read the bill.
It goes from 1.09 to 3.15?
I think. 3.15.
That's why it's double.
You'll see the 3.15.
And then...
Yeah, I see on page 13, line 12. That's where it's...
Yeah.
And then it's here.
And then it's in our... Yeah. Okay, thank you. Sorry about that. I'm just going to try and, unless there's any urgent questions, I'm going to try and get through our public. Great. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to work on the working group.
Al Elkins, and you're bringing Rick with you, and Bill Richardson. Just for people that know you're up next, it'll be Lonnie Johnson, Trey Tracy, and Craig Wenrick.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, Al Elkins representing the Oregon Hunters Association. With me today is Rick Williams, who's the vice president of Oregon Hunters Association, and he's going to give our position and the board's position on the fee increase.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for letting me testify today. As Al said, I'm Rick Williams. I'm vice president of the Oregon Hunters Association, and I'm testifying on their behalf today. Specifically, I'm here to reiterate our support, our conditional support for ODFW's fee increase proposal. In particular, we support the fee increase proposal based on the following conditions. One, that ODFW embark on aggressive deer and elk recovery programs, including predator control if necessary. Two, that the youth hunting package and enhancements remain in the proposal, that the miscellaneous occupational fees package remain, and that we continue funding for OSP, including the enforcement enhancements. Not coincidentally, those conditions are based upon the EBAC budgeting process, the ODFW town hall meetings, and input from our members. So the OHA has been a part of this process for quite a long time, as Director Ellicker was talking about. We recognize that there's tough economic times at hand and that there's probably going to be proposed amendments to the fee increase package. And all we ask is that you take the time to consider and prioritize our conditions as part of the fee increase proposal going forward. That's all I have. Thank you.
We haven't been writing them before, I think, don't we? If not, maybe, Al, could you just get us a shepherd sheet that's just got them?
I've got a copy. Mr. Chair, I have one copy of our letter.
I'll leave it with staff. Great. Thank you very much. Sorry, Bill. Please.
Thank you. My name is Bill Richardson. I live 24550 Irvin Road, Willamette, Oregon, and I'm the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation's Lands Program Manager for Oregon and Washington. Chairman Clem and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. Wildlife and recreational fisheries management in Oregon is funded by user fees in the form of recreational hunting and fishing licenses and tag fees, and by federal distribution of excise taxes on firearms and ammunition, as well as excise taxes on fishing tackle. There's a small amount of revenue from the state lottery, state marine board, the federal grants, and the match requirement is license and tag fee funded, and a minuscule amount of general fund revenue. ODF&W proposes increases in the fees every 6 years, and since the last increase, inflation has driven up ODF&W's operating costs just as it has driven up the costs of every other business and government service, so the current need for a fee increase comes as no surprise. Recreation licenses and tags have always been the largest source of local revenue for ODF&W. This category of fees needs to be raised on the basis of inflation to provide continued support to existing wildlife programs such as the Deer Enhancement and Restoration Program, the Green Forage Program, and the Access and Habitat Program. And I'll add that wildlife law enforcement will also be maintained and supported by the fee increases. and RMUF supports the proposed license and tag fee increases in House Bill 2223. This year, ODF&W is also proposing to increase the miscellaneous and occupational licenses covered by Section 16 ORS 497.258. None of the miscellaneous and occupational fees have been raised in years. The newest fees in this category were increased in 2000. Some were raised in the period between the mid-1980s to the mid-1990s, and some have not been raised since 1974. Some fees have not been raised since their inception. The miscellaneous and occupational license program does not pay for itself, forcing the difference to be backfilled with recreational hunting and fishing license and tag fee revenue. RMEF believes the miscellaneous and occupational license program should be self-supporting. Increase the miscellaneous and occupational license fees to cover the full cost of administration and enforcement. And in the future, review the miscellaneous and occupational fees for adequacy on the same schedule as the recreational license and tag fees for hunting and fishing. RMEF appreciates our partnership with the State of Oregon and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and we believe that the proposed fee increases are needed to ensure ODF&W's success in managing Oregon's wildlife. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, gentlemen. So, Lonnie Johnson, Trey Karskadon? Karskadon. You bet. Craig Wenrick. After that will be David Judkins, Betsy Glenn, and Dale Ballard. Lonnie.
Yes, sir.
Please.
Good morning, Chair Klim, members of the committee. My name is Lonnie Johnson. I'm from Grants Pass, and I am the current chair of the R&E board, and I also have the privilege of serving on the External Budget Advisory Committee. I am here in support of these fee increases for the recreational anglers, and most in particular, being from Grants Pass, I fish quite a bit in California and have been paying the $110 fees for non-resident angling, and I think this is way past due to get up where we have parity. But I represent one of the organizations that I am with represents approximately 350 anglers in Southern Oregon, and while you'll get grimaces and rolling of the eyes when you talk about these, everybody understands the need. And we feel as though our connection with ODFW is extremely important. And we also feel that there is conceivably some loss of revenue simply by reason of poaching. So we're very, very much in favor of maintaining and increasing enforcement. Thank you.
Chair Clem, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. My name is Trey Karskadon. I live in Tualatin, and I'm here representing the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association, also known as NSIA. NSIA represents more than 300 sport fishing businesses, large and small, around the Northwest. We count retailers, guides, manufacturers, rep groups, magazines, advertising agencies, and distributors as our members. This means we have direct contact with the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife's customers. They are our customers as well, and these decisions have a direct impact on our future and our businesses. You have my written testimony, which goes into far more detail than I will verbally, and I also appreciate very much the invitation to participate in the work group later today. After 30 years in the sport fishing industry, I can share with complete certainty that House Bill 2223 will not deliver the intended benefits. The goal is to buoy funding, and we believe it will drive license sales down. That's why I oppose this bill and ask that you don't pass it out of committee. Right now, we're hearing from our customers, the same ones we share with ODFW, that they're frustrated by abbreviated and uncertain seasons, complex regulations, and declining fishing opportunities. We've been hearing it for years, and we've shared it with the agency, commission, and the legislature. It's reached a boiling point this year, and I can tell you that that frustration is unprecedented. NSIA has supported every fee increase since its inception in 1992. That support has not always been popular, either with the legislature or the sport fishing public. In fact, we've even initiated a couple of fee increases, including the hatchery harvest tag and the shellfish license. If there's a distinct value, we're in. What's failing is the processes and policies that guide the agency. At the heart of the funding question is participation. Fishing opportunity drives participation, and I appreciate Representative Roblin's comments. They reflect our sentiments very closely. Unfortunately, those opportunities have been in decline, and you're seeing that reflected in license sales. If you look at license sales numbers over the past decade, you'll find a nice spike in 2001 and 2002 when Oregon was posting the highest unemployment rates in the country. The difference was that we had historic high runs of salmon going up the Columbia River, which generated unprecedented interest and attention, and that affected license sales for all species across the board. With declining fishing opportunity has come the loss of young anglers, our future, who no longer have places like Johnson Creek and Portland to fish for trout. Not for any compelling biological reason, but for social reasons that make no sense. Johnson Creek is just a snapshot of what's happening statewide. Until we address these broader issues related to participation, we'll see more of the same. Sport fishing also finds a long list of important conservation measures. Continuing down the path we're headed means we'll have to shed some of those responsibilities unless we figure a way to buoy participation. I can assure you increasing fees is not that answer. Not today it isn't. That's why we're recommending this committee create a legislative task force that puts this fee on hold until 2011, studies this issue completely, and works collaboratively with the agency and stakeholders to create a long-term solution that expands fishing opportunities across the state. For now, and for the first time since 1992, this fee increase is something that we oppose. As an association, we hope you do as well, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify and for your service to the state. I encourage your questions.
I just have one quick question. The last proposal task force put the fee on hold. Are you just referring to the resident angler set of fees?
Yes, the resident angler fee increase, yes.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Please.
Thank you, Chair Clem and committee members. My name is Craig Wenrick, and I'm a member of the Dorymen's Association and a member of the Fishermen's Advisory Committee for Tillamook County. I commercial fish a 22-foot dory off the beach of Cape Kiwanda in Pacific City and have a wholesale dealer's license in order to sell my fish to local restaurants, fish markets, and individuals. My business can be described as a mom-and-pop and occasional kid operation. We work very hard, and the money is not great, but we enjoy providing local product to the local area. As regulations increase and quotas decrease, it's often difficult to make ends meet. The proposed fee increases would have a severely negative impact on my family. While each fee may seem reasonable, the accumulative effect is not. I need 7 licenses permits to operate the way I work my business now. And you'll see in what I handed out, there's a breakdown of my licenses that I need, boat, personal, crew member, crab permit, salmon permit, nearshore permit, and wholesale dealer's license. All these licenses have to be purchased every year, whether there is a season for that species or not. You can also see the increases, and I'll just, without going over all of them, I'll give you the totals for the record. Currently paid $910 a year to get started. With the fee increases, it will go up to $1,495 every year to get started, which is a net increase of $585. Combine those with the increase of my fillet room license from $125 in 2004 to $452 in 2008, that makes a net increase of 88% of licensing increases I will have over 4 years. I'm sure that my situation is not dissimilar from many fishing families up and down the coast. With another near complete closure facing us in the salmon fishery, this is the last thing any small business needs at this time. Thank you.
Yes, Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. Mr. Wenrick, could you help me identify who you pay these fees to, like the boat? Is that a state fee or a county fee?
All of these licenses that I have listed here go to ODF&W.
Thank you.
Yes.
Just a question. I think I know the answer, but is it your choice when throughout the year you want to buy the salmon fee based on, or salmon tag based on when your salmon license, whatever it's called for commercial, sorry, I just buy my residential one. If you know that there's going to be a closure or near closure. Did you already have to have bought it earlier and then you really don't get any help if you can't really use it?
In order to keep your permits from year to year, they have to be purchased. Some are worked a little differently. The crab and salmon have to be purchased before December 31st of the year that you're purchasing them for. The nearshore rockfish permit actually has to be bought the year before you need it. Mm-hmm. So, yes, all of these have to be purchased every year, whether there's a season or not. There's also the ad valorem fees that Terry Thompson talked about, which is actually a 300% increase. I don't want to dispute his math, but it will actually be a 3% increase. We pay a poundage fee on everything else. We pay a 5% fee on salmon. We pay a 3% fee also on salmon. I think that's the one that goes to the R&E board. We pay to the National Marine Fisheries to help pay for the buyback loan. When I sit down and write checks every month, there's a lot of them.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much for coming over. David Judkins, Betsy Glenn, and Dale Ballard. On deck, Jay Nicholas, Dennis Ritchie, and Bob Olson. Got David up first.
Chairman Clem and members of the committee, thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today as a member of SEIU 503. My name is David Judkins. I'm an employee of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. I work here in Salem headquarters as the database administrator and computer applications developer. SEIU 503 strongly supports the passage of House Bill 2223. Obviously, I'm interested in keeping my fellow workers employed as a member of the union. Quite frankly, that is very important to me because they're a wonderful group of highly dedicated, highly trained, educated people who are dedicated to the resource. But at the bottom of this issue really is the resources of the state, the fish and wildlife, and the opportunities that those provide for hunting, fishing, and viewing. My background before I got into information technology was a research scientist, and particularly in the area of marine ecology. I recognize and see all around me how variable the environment is and how widely populations fluctuate. I wrote a good portion of the programs, the databases for harvest of fish and big game and bird species. I see from year to year, look at the data, I wrote most of the reports, I can see how widely populations fluctuate and how necessary it is for professionals to examine this data and make decisions about changes of harvest. If we have large staff layoffs, which will occur if we don't get this fee increase, we're going to lose a lot of professionals who are able to manage this resource so it's not over-exploited. It's going to be available for future generations and enhance the quality of people's lives in this state. I strongly encourage you to pass this bill. At a time of record need, all of the budget parameters matter. Our agency needs to have increased revenue, and the increased revenue needs to be this biennium. Director Elliker has laid out the consequences of not getting this. I won't go over that. He's better qualified than me to speak to that issue. I think the future of our life in Oregon is be adversely affected if we do not manage this increasingly complex environment where we have population growth and a lot of development because of that. all these invasive species coming in, plant and animals, and climate change. So we need to stay on top of this issue. We need people to do it. And we need professional people to do it. We lose those people, we may fall behind far more than in a fiscal sense. So thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today.
Thank you very much. Let's see.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is Betsy Glenn. I'm from Corvallis, Oregon, and I'm here today representing my professional society, which is the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society. And the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society represents over 200 wildlife professionals in Oregon. And our chapter goals include providing science-based information on wildlife issues to aid in the public discussion of natural resource management. And as a society of professionals, this use of good science is one of our cornerstone principles, and we have a responsibility to use our goals and principles to address issues affecting the current and future status of wildlife in Oregon. And Oregon has long had the reputation of having one of the most effective wildlife programs in the United States. However, reductions in the program and staff have affected the excellence of these programs over time. And we believe that the proposed increases in the license and tag fees will help bring back some of these programs to the status that we feel is necessary to effectively and scientifically manage Oregon's rich and diverse wildlife resources. And we thank you for the opportunity to present our perspective on this bill, and we are available to provide further information if needed.
Please.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today. I am Dale Ballard, resident of Mooloolah, and a member of the Coastal Conservation Association of Oregon, serving on the Government Relations Committee. I am pleased to have the opportunity to present CCA Oregon's testimony related to the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife fee increase. CCA opposes House Bill 2223 until the legislature adopts salmon and steelhead harvest reforms. To achieve recovery and leverage record investments in habitat, hatchery, and hydro improvements, we must swiftly implement selective harvest reforms to ensure that more Endangered Species Act listed and wild fish actually reach the spawning grounds. The congressionally funded independent hatchery scientific review group has identified several essential recommendations for recovering and rebuilding runs of Chinook, Coho, and steelhead, including, quote, the selective removal of hatchery fish with low mortality of natural fish, unquote. CCA Oregon agrees with the HSRG recommendation that selective commercial fishing gear needs to be developed and assessed for use in the Columbia River Basin. In fact, CCA Oregon helped introduce House Bill 2579 to re-legalize the responsible use of commercial fishing gear capable of selectively harvesting abundant runs of hatchery salmon while avoiding the harvest of endangered and wild stocks of Columbia River salmon and steelhead. CCA Oregon supports ODFW Policy Package 302, which would help fund the development and evaluation of selective commercial salmon fishing gear, although we believe the funding level should significantly be higher than the $350,000 proposed. It is important to note that CCA Oregon supports vibrant but sustainable recreational and commercial fisheries. The failure to develop and utilize selective fishing methods results in the wastage of many thousands of hatchery fish annually. With marked selective harvest, abundant hatchery fish will be available to provide robust recreational and commercial fisheries. These, in turn, will bring increased opportunity and significant economic benefits to the state and additional revenues to ODF&W. CCA Oregon recognizes the need for ODF&W to be fully funded, but must reluctantly oppose House Bill 2223 unless the above-mentioned HSRG recommendations and conservation measures receive a top priority. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Very briefly, this is directed at the gentleman from SEIU. I really appreciate you being here and representing your public employee union today. Mm-hmm. You work inside this part of our state. You understand the resource. You understand the management of the resource. Mm-hmm. You understand the need for the revenue that comes from these good people to manage that and the benefits it provides this state. I'll be quite frank with you. I think the public employee unions in general neglect this committee, the Land Use Committee, the Energy and Environment Committee, because the decisions we make in here have a direct impact on our economy in this state. And it's the economy
in a strong economy, it was where money comes from that provides all the services we provide in this state. And as long as that's neglected by people that demand more revenue, I tell you, we're just not going to be able to provide the revenue. But I just wanted to thank you for being here, because you fit every bit of my criteria as far as what I believe public employee unions should be doing. You should be very interested in our natural resources, our land use, our water decisions, energy decisions, our ability to create and build and maintain a strong economy. Because once again, the revenue comes from the economy. It does not come from public services. It's economy first. Then it is public service and all the good things that we do throughout public services. So I really appreciate you coming here today. Thank you.
I wanted to ask one question, Dale, briefly. Are your comments regarding opposing the bill sort of specific to the fishing-related fees? I mean, do you think that the CCA doesn't even support the hunting fee increases?
We really haven't delved into the hunting fee increase side of it.
So kind of somebody else that had similar testimony that let's talk further about any of these fishing increases, you know, for a period of time.
Just really concerned about the selective harvest issues on the Columbia.
I saw a lot of hats in the orange hats around the other day. I know you are.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
No. You talked a lot about pigs earlier. Please, Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just real quickly, Dale, I just want to be sure that we understand, even though it's been a while since these fees have gone up, if we look at the director's testimony, CCA is opposed because of the timing. I mean, this session particularly has a lot of questions to be answered. They're not just economic, but they're also regarding conservation and fish.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be a standard policy for you to oppose. But we've got some other, almost said fish to fry, we've got some other issues to settle first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, am I understanding the testimony correctly?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Good. Mm-hmm. Maybe I should ask one other question, though. Do you oppose the increase or them even having fees at all on fishing? Because if we don't pass the bill, essentially they wouldn't have any fees for fishing, I think.
I'd have to get back to you on that specifically. And maybe Sean?
The increases. Yeah, it's okay. We've got a voice from the audience about the increases in the fees. Okay, we're good. Representative Roblin.
We have this cross-section of people. I just had a question about another bill that may be coming here, and that has to do with a tax on bird seed to allow other people in Oregon to help pay for some of these costs of maintaining our fish and wildlife and manage of this resource and looking at a broader base as opposed to just these fees. Any ideas about the increase in bird seed for those people who like to bird and go watch and take a look at our wildlife?
Chairman Clem and Representative Roblin, this issue has been discussed within ODFW for a number of years, and there have been unsuccessful attempts to, say, put fees, taxes on binoculars and scopes and that type of item that bird watchers use a lot. I would like to see some movement in that area, actually, because we do have a parking fee for Savi Island, and that does generate some revenue and maintains viewing sites and restrooms, and I don't know what percentage it takes care of. The bird seed issue was knocked a little bit, but it's made a lot of sense to me.
The author of the bird seed bill is pretty happy with your answer, over there, by the way.
One of the others.
Chair Clem, Representative Roblin, both the Oregon chapter of the Wildlife Society has been fairly interested in fees from non-hunters and fishers for supporting natural resources, and I would have to get back to you with specific details on our position statements, but it is something we are very interested in and will likely comment on.
Thanks.
Well, there's a question about taxes and excise taxes.
I think we're going to finish the testimony. Yeah. We'll have you back short on time.
We have one more person to answer the question. Yes.
Chair Clem, I just wanted to reiterate, you know, the HSRG recommendations as they came, you know, federally funded independent scientific review group, they really specifically line out what we must do, and we must do it soon. Whether or not how that correlates to the fee increase, that's up to you guys, but we really have to do something, and I know there's a cost basis, you know, affecting that, but that's where our focus is right now, and we really want to emphasize that we need some reform there. And, you know, we're getting 3 days, 4 days on the Columbia right now, and you know, when we could be harvesting hatchery salmon, you know, day after day, but we can't because we reach the impacts too fast to the Endangered Species Act listed salmon. Mm-hmm. That's why we need the reform.
Okay. Thank you very much. And next I've got Jay Nicholas, Dennis Ritchie, and Bob Olson. On deck, Rod Harder, David Moskowitz, and Tom Wolf. Okay. Jay Nicholas.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Jay Nicholas. I live in Corvallis, and I'm here today representing the Wild Salmon Center. I'm going to confine... Oh, I'm sorry. I have some written remarks here. Social faux pas, way to get going.
No problem.
You'll have my written comments. They're brief. I'm going to make my key points even briefer. I'd like to mention three things to you today. The first is I'm here to express general support for the recreational angling fee increases. That's support. Second point is... I'd like to note that the Wild Salmon Center is dedicated to preserving wild, native salmon and steelhead in Oregon and across the Pacific Rim. So that's our foundation. That said, I can't imagine Oregon, a future in Oregon, without well-managed hatcheries, hatchery fish, angling opportunities. And I also can't imagine a future without ODFW having a strong foundation in science and management so that they can do the best job of managing both wild and hatchery fish. My final point I'd like to reiterate, this fee increase is essential to maintain the department's scientific and budget integrity to ensure the future of fish and fishing. And I'd like to close by saying, I do fish. I live to fish. And I encourage you to pass this angling fee increase. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Clam, representatives, my name is Dennis Ritchie. I'm executive director of Oregon Anglers, an all-volunteer group of sport fishermen. And when Representative Krieger started out at the beginning of this hearing, I thought I wouldn't have to testify at all. But there are a few points that I would like to make. As a member of the Oregon Sport Fishing Advisory, Ocean Sport Fishing Advisory Board, there are some cuts in this 30% budget that are really aimed at nearshore mapping and rockfish and bottomfish research. And without those, we will continue to have early closures, and that, as you've seen a few years ago, can affect the coastal economy with millions of dollars lost. I've been reelected as chair of the Oregon Hatchery Research Center's Stakeholders Advisory Board, and I set the agendas, and it's absolutely amazing to me to see the number of scientists that come from around the world to our hatchery research center to not only use our facilities, but to offer their expertise to us to try and overcome some of the problems that we have with the mix of wild and hatchery fish. This is key to part of our economy succeeding in the long run. I'm also with the sport fishing representative on the pinniped interaction, fishery interaction task force set up by NOAA. And we finally overcome some of the court challenges, and we're going forward trying to find the proper balance of control with predators on the Columbia. We need to continue that thing. And as a stakeholder advisor on the Upper Willamette Recovery Plan that's just beginning again after over a year's hiatus, this is something that needs to continue. I am involved in a number of things with ODFW. I can't find any of them I think are really a waste of time. I think they're all very, very important. Most important, I'm a dedicated fisherman and conservationist. That's why I'm involved with Oregon Anglers. That's why we founded the group. And we feel that Oregon's hatcheries need to be reformed to work out. We need to look to the future and adjust our thinking. There's not going to be money now to do that. That's obvious. But when we have general fund cuts and the next go-round comes around 2 years, those general fund cuts are rarely restored. We need to look at today making some kind of statement that will direct the people who are here in 2 years to look at the possibility of restoring some of the general fund cuts, not only to fisheries but to other areas. Budgetary decisions are always tough, but I feel that some of the things that we are doing in this state in fish and wildlife, and that includes the hunting sector, are so necessary for the future of the state that we cannot neglect them solely because somebody is here constantly at you for money for other things. We have to balance the equation. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Chair Clem, committee members, Bob Olson. I'm with the here today on behalf of the Northwest Steelheaders. Our organization has many of the same concerns you've heard expressed here today. I think it's fair to say we conditionally support the measure. It's a moving target. We understand that, and we appreciate your attention to it. Also appreciated is the agency's attempt to fairly distribute the burden and the fees among all the sectors of the fish and wildlife community. All of us are trying to adjust to a situation of depleted state resources. It is very unlikely that ODF programs will be maintained without the additional fee money that's being requested. We hope to receive assurances that this additional money will be effectively spent, and we look forward to working with you and others in trying to finalize this proposal. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Rod Harder, David Moskowitz, and Tom Wolf. And after that, our final three, I'm adding on a couple who signed up via note. So Joe Rollator, Dave Wiley, and Alan Ross will be the final three.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Rod Harder, the Oregon consultant for the National Rifle Association. I have been around here for about 10 or 12 of these budget sessions, and I am a member of the External Budget Advisory Committee. And of all those times and all those years, the one issue that has ever come up where I get no resistance to spending the money, that's law enforcement. And here we are again, and I told Captain Marquis the other night, I bought him 26 positions about six or seven times now, the same 26, unfortunately. So here we are back again doing the same thing. The one place that we really don't need to make any cuts is in law enforcement. We get two for one with these guys. In lots of cases, they're the only enforcement in rural Oregon in addition to being the wildlife cops. We certainly support the juvenile tag fee reductions. I think it's a great program. Thanks to Senator Beyer, who was here earlier, and Chair Roblin last session. We got the Youth Mentor Program through. That's a great program. It's increasing every year. And so we certainly support anything we can do to get our youth involved. I want to mention, and no one else has today, the trappers took a real hit in this budget. They doubled their trapping license fees, have doubled their bobcat tag fees, and have, looks like, almost tripled the fees for otter tags. Just want to remind people that trappers do a service to us by controlling wildlife populations over and above what other sports groups do. Do all NRA members support the fee increase? I'm sorry to say no, they don't. But with regard to trappers, they were silent. We have not heard a word from them about the fee increase. I think they understand what this agency does. I would absolutely agree with Representative Schaffler. This money, when we get it, should stay where it is intended to be, and that's right here within the agency. No sweep. I'm sorry, just no sweep. In any way or anything we have to do to make sure that happens needs to happen, because we would not support this fee increase if we don't have some assurances that that would take place. Finally, one biennium, a suggestion that has already been discussed. It's not my idea, but I think doing this for one biennium and seeing how things work out with the economy, with other things, might not be a bad way to go. It also leaves less money at risk to be taken away. And finally, I have just to make a comment on the Marine Reserve Program. There's a budget option, and this is my comment, not NRA's. There's a budget option package that talks about money from New Carissa. In that option package, there should be a statement of some type, preferably in law, but if not, a budget notice. That money is not forthcoming, and the replace and the Marine Reserve should go away and not be established. Thank you very much.
Okay. Chair Clem, members of the committee, my name is David Moskowitz, and I'm here today on behalf of the Native Fish Society. Native Fish Society has been supportive of ODFW's fee increases and budgets in the past, for many years, in fact. Native Fish Society has also participated on the Citizen Budget Advisory Committee with ODFW. Native Fish Society is on record in supporting the protection of the enforcement section provided by the Oregon State Police. We've testified to that during the rebalancing. I'd like to make note that Native Fish Society supports the ODFW staff, the field staff that are in offices around this state, who know those regions and these critters, and that work with all of us who care about fish and wildlife. We're disappointed today with what we believe is somewhat short-sighted opposition to this fee increase, because if this fee increase is not granted, we will lose many of those people that we work with every day, and this is whether you're a timberland owner, whether you're a fisherman, a hunter, a commercial fisher. We're going to lose people because the depth of the cuts that you, your body is going to have to make under this environment is very severe. There may be quibbles about how this money's spent and what programs are priorities, and we'll continue to work on that, but not granting this fee increase will prevent us. The agency will get back to in 2 years will not be the same agency. We can't let that happen. I want to point out a bill, Senate Bill 697, that's coming from Senator Bates and Senator Morse, which would establish an extra fee on non-resident anglers for certain classified waters, both rivers and streams. It sets up a system that really will be a great marketing tool for Oregon's incredible angling opportunities. We hope to bring that forward to add one more piece to this puzzle of funding this agency. I want to just use the rest of my time to sort of tell a story, because I think you've heard a lot of dissatisfaction. In 2008, I had an incredible year of fishing, and it wasn't just catching, but it was the fact of the experience that I had out in Oregon's rivers, whether it was the Oregon North Coast or out in eastern Oregon. Standing in the Deschutes River with my daughter, who's wishing and praying a fish will grab her fly,
And I'm thinking, I just hope this fish grabs. She's probably thinking about the milkshake that I promised her that we'll get at Big Jim's in the Dalles when we go home. But that's our angling dollars contributing to the economy. Or maybe it's sitting in my drift boat in an eastern Oregon river with an East Coast friend who's never been to the desert, who thought Oregon was just a rainy place. But having, he just paid a huge non-resident fee for the privilege of fishing in Oregon. And it was an incredible experience. And he continues to rave about it. Or it's sitting in a small coastal cafe with the rain beating against the windows with my buddies, delaying going out into the winter rain to fish for winter steelhead on the coast. We're sitting in there having breakfast, drinking coffee, bringing our dollars to a local community, but going out there and with, you know, winter steelheading with a fly is just about the most least effective way to catch those fish. It's the experience that we're going for. And in 2008, it was incredible. And the price of our license to give us the privilege to be out in those rivers is nothing compared to the priceless experience. And I really appreciate your committee's diligence on this issue, and we hope to work with the agency and with you to figure this out. Thank you.
Thanks.
Chair Clem, committee members, my name is Tom Wolf, the executive director of the Oregon Council of Trout Unlimited, representing the 3,000 members of Trout Unlimited in this state. We support House Bill 2223, increasing the fees. We of course have some concerns about where the money will be spent, but as David so articulately spoke, without this license fee increase, many of the staff that work so hard to protect our wild fish, to work on projects, their positions will be cut, and that's just something that we just can't condone. We did a polling of our members of TU in the state, and 90% of them supported a license fee increase, recognizing, of course, it would cost them, but that the price is nothing compared to experience. When you look at it, if the residence fee will go up to $32.50, I went fishing 20 times last year, which isn't as much as I want to, but that's about $1.50 per trip. I spend $300 to $400 a year for fly tying materials. I spend a good fly rod cost me $400. A license fee increase is a very minuscule part of my fishing experience, and I think that for us to get overly concerned about that, it's ridiculous. We need the agency to continue. We need to look at more creative ways to raise funds, which is why my group supports the bird seed tax. We think that's a good way, and we need to look at ways in the future that are creative like that. But right now, we're facing a huge budget deficit, and we need this fee increase, and it outweighs any of the minor concerns that TU has, and we support the agency in their fee increase. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Got to get the last three up here. Joe, Dave, and Alan.
Representative Clem, members of the committee, my name is Joe Rollator. I live in Walport, Oregon. I represent a diverse group of fishing clients. I represent the Newport Shrimp Fishermen, which is a commercial fishing organization. I'd like to reiterate on behalf of them what Terry Thompson said about our fees. I thought he did a very good job of explaining ad valorem fees. The ex-vessel value of our shrimp in the last 4 years have varied from under 30 cents a pound to over 60 cents a pound. And so our ad valorem fee that we pay has gone up and down with that. On behalf of the Oregon Coast Charter Boat Association, I'd like to say that while we generally support the fee increases, we're concerned about the big jump in one-day license fees. The total cost of a one-day license to our fishing clients goes from the current $12 to a proposed $16.25, which is a 35% increase. If you look on page 5 of the bill, you'll see that it says it goes from $9.75 to $12, but or to $11. But you have to add in the R&E fee restoration enhancement fee, and you have to add in a couple of surcharges and the agent's fee. So we're concerned about that big jump. About half of our fishing clients buy one-day licenses. We know it's a very important component of the fee structure for ODFW, but when you're charging $50 or $75 for a one-day trip, according to how long the trip is and what the services you provide the client are, and the fee to the state to do that is, in some cases, a third of the total value, it makes people pause. And we're trying to get people in Oregon to fish in Oregon this summer, and we'd like to have you look at the one-day license fees. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
Chairman Clem, members of the committee, my name is Dave Wiley. I live in Sublimity, Oregon. I'm a volunteer for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, and I served on the ODFW External Budget Advisory Committee. I'm before you today to talk just a little bit about what volunteers' interests might be in this. To begin with, the foundation, as you heard from Mr. Richardson, strongly supports the department and its staff, and Oregon State Police Department and its Fish and Wildlife Enforcement staff. Those two go hand in hand, and we must continue to fund them, or we'll lose a tremendous personnel resource in the case of the individuals involved doing the work, and put at risk our Oregon wildlife and fisheries. Now, economic inflation, of course, has driven up the cost of doing business over the last 6 years, and it's just no surprise that we need a fee increase to do that. But having said all that, we need more law enforcement. We need to support the increase that the department has asked for in its Green Forage program, which will be funded by this. That's a program that provides forage for deer and elk. Of particular importance, though, to thinking people is that the sportsmen, fishermen, and hunters pay money out of their pocket to support all the fish and wildlife in the state of Oregon. And indirectly, the arms, ammunition, and fishing tackle, excise taxes at the federal level come back to the state of Oregon on the basis partly of licenses sold. And as a consequence, we take a dim view of diversion or backfill of general fund activities with license and tag fee dollars. In a related area, the miscellaneous and occupational fees, which the department has asked you to increase, and some of them increased substantially, to the extent that those fees do not cover the cost of the services that must be invested in, that there again there is a backfill of license and tag fee dollars. And those fees have not been raised in many instances for years, as you've heard. And as a consequence, as I said again, some of those fees are going up quite a little bit. On the other hand, to the extent that you don't raise those fees, license and tag fee dollars will be diverted to the private benefits that those licenses are authorized for. Finally, in the state of Oregon, fishing, hunting, wildlife viewing bring to the state economy something like $2.4 billion, that's with a B, billion dollars annually, and something in excess of 19,500 jobs depend upon that or are generated by that. So in these hard times, it might be well to consider that keeping a healthy fish and wildlife department and thus a healthy fish and wildlife population for all our present and future generation to view and enjoy would be a good investment. Thank you.
Alan, please.
Chair Clinton, members of the committee, my name is Alan Ross. I live in Malala, Oregon. I am an elk rancher. I'm here representing Oregon's elk and deer farmers and ranchers.
I wanted just to point out the survey propagation license type 1 and 2 fee increases. We're talking, for, in the case of an elk ranch, we're talking a 20,000% increase over what we're currently paying. Needless to say, we find that to be a little preposterous. It's way outside of any sort of an aggregate proposed fee increase or any... It's too much. Elk and deer ranchers are, for the most part, small, family-run, rural-type businesses. We're trying to grow an industry. We're trying to use our property to what we think is for good. We're in my case, we're raising elk for meat. We're doing tourism, trying to get something going. By raising these fees, it's gonna destroy a lot of us. There's one case, there's a deer farmer out towards Astoria. She's got just a handful of fallow deer, and she runs a petting zoo. $800 a year for the license is gonna take her out of the game. We're asking the committee to please have a look at the survey propagation license type 1 and 2. We're not opposed to a modest fee increase. We understand times have changed. We think 20,000% increase and 16,000% increase is beyond the pale.
One quick question we've got to get going. I think that in this case, the fee increase isn't about inflation. It's, from what I understand from the testimony, it's about cost recovery for the program, and that equals then the amount that you're talking about, a percent increase. So I guess my question is there an amount or a percentage that you feel like is fair that you pay towards the cost of the program and then the rest of the public chips in to help facilitate it? You know, is there some sort of ratio that seems fair to you?
Chairo, thank you for that opportunity. One of the things that I've written before is the people who get the benefit should foot the bill. And in the case of the cervid propagation license, we deer and elk ranchers really derive no benefit whatsoever from fish and wildlife. That, I'm not trying to run that department down at all. They're very good people, good professional people. We don't get any benefit. In other words, the cost of the program is for doing facilities inspections, is for maintaining herd inventories and everything, and it's all about it's a policing activity,
right,
if you will. So it doesn't seem fair that the people who are being policed foot the bill for it. In other words, we don't have any say in what they do or how much they spend. They're just saying, here, write the blank check and we'll fill it in. We don't think that's right. We're all paying taxes. We're all paying, you know, general fund type taxes. And if the department feels that they need to do whatever to protect and enhance Oregon's wildlife, then by all means, please do that. What we're saying is don't turn around and hand us the check.
I think you'd be an anomaly if you weren't the ones within Fish and Wildlife not paying the cost of the reinforcement, because I hunt and fish, and my tags go to the enforcement to make sure I behave. So I think we can talk about what, you know, the ratio, but I don't think we're going to get it all general funded and get it out of the hunter's pocket either, and that's who usually I hear from upset about the subsidizing of the industry comes from the hunters.
Chair Clement, yeah. I respectfully disagree. There are plenty of programs on here that are not self-funded, and with these fee increases, they're...
I'm referring to general fund.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, with that, my only comment, just because I don't know if I'm going to get to be in the work group, so I'll say it now. Vice Chair Krieger is going to be doing a lot of work. He's done a lot of work. My one issue really comes down to, on the resident side, fishing and hunting. In tight economic times,
big farms.
If people decide the fee increase is too much, they still go. They go anyway. They just don't pay, and they poach, and it happens. And while $8 or $9 may not seem a lot to, you know, somebody who is spending a lot of money on flies and fly rods, where I grew up, you know, there were times when my parents had literally nothing. We're laid off, we're cashing in pensions, and it doesn't mean I wasn't going to go fishing. The question is whether I paid to go fishing or not, because we would go anyway if we had to. And so that's my only calculation that I'm trying to do, is understanding whether or not, and, you know, essentially we're going to have diminishing returns because people just don't pay and then they go anyway. Then you need enforcement badly. You know, there's no doubt about that. But you know, that's the only factor for me, really, on these fees. I don't think that I think the department deserves the money. I don't think that's an issue. It's will people continue to even buy tags as they lose their jobs, or they just go and do it, and then we got to try and catch them. With that, I'm going to adjourn the committee. Thank you. Oh, I need to carry over the work sessions for today on 2218, 2628, 2222. Thanks.